This podcast on 97.3 The Fan is presented by Hummel Casino. Fun above all else.
So yesterday, Major League Baseball announced the three finalists for all their major awards. Welcome back. It's Ben Woods here on 97.3 The Fan. It's an odd thing to do because the winners have already been selected. They were voted for at the end of the regular season by the Baseball Writers Association of America. So by announcing the finals, it's not like, okay, now they're going to re-vote among the three finalists.
Sure.
It's simply the first, second, and third place vote getters in each category. But the winner is already locked in. Nothing is going to change between now and next week. It's simply a little PR stunt to try to drum up some stories and a little attention and talk about it today, which, I guess is successful.
And that's fine. I mean, baseball traditionally doesn't do a great job at stuff like this. They did a terrible job with the Gold Glove announcements. It was on like a Sunday in the middle
of
Sunday.
It was during the election.
That's right. It was on election night.
By the way, so-and-so won third base Gold Glove. Like, what are you doing? So normally they're pretty terrible at doing this,
as they are in free agency and how it drags on for 6 months every year. But this is a way for, them to drum this up, and it sparks some interesting discussions.
No surprises on the two Padres nominees.
None whatsoever.
For the Jackie Robinson National League Rookie of the Year Award, Jackson Merrill is a finalist.
This is Jackson Merrill.
Alongside Paul Skenes and Jackson.
I love Paul Skenes.
Jackson Churio of the Milwaukee Brewers. If there was ever a slam dunk 1-2-3 in any vote, it's probably those three who all had seasons that in any other year probably would have easily won them the Rookie of the Year Award. But in this year, the competition is intense and likely will come down to Jackson Merrill against Paul Skenes, as it has in the other, awards that have been given out by different organizations. Jackson won the Player's Choice Award. Paul Skenes won. Whose award did Paul Skenes win last week? I forget. Someone else gave him the
Sporting News?
Sporting News, perhaps. Yeah. So they've kind of split the first couple of awards, and we'll find out next Monday which of those two wins the official Baseball Writers Award, which does come with the bonus draft pick. If Jackson Merrill wins, the Padres get that compensatory draft pick because they were smart enough to put him on their roster at the beginning of the season. Again, the Pirates would not get that because they didn't have Paul Skenes. We've gone through all the arguments between the two. Jackson Merrill, everyday player. Paul Skenes made, 22 starts? Has a limited impact on his team, but was unbelievable in those 22 starts.
Him being a Cy Young finalist,
pretty nuts.
Made me a little nervous for Jackson Merrill.
I agree with you, because those are some of the same people. Now, they're not the exact same people who vote, because you only get one category that you vote in, but if Baseball Writers deemed Paul Skenes a top three Cy Young winner, my guess is some of those same baseball writers also think, well, if he's that good, there's only been five rookies who have ever been a top three Cy Young vote getter, then isn't he definitely the Rookie of the Year in the minds of baseball writers? That worries me a little bit.
Jackson won Sporting News and Skenes won Baseball Digest.
Got it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, thanks, I mean, there's certainly a reason for at least...
Fine. Give Skenes the Cy Young and give Merrill the Rookie of the Year, and let's call this thing call it a wash.
Which wouldn't be the worst outcome. I think Chris Sale is going to win the Cy Young in the National League. So I think the only chance for Skenes to win a postseason award would be the Rookie of the Year award. And, if writers would go, well, he deserves a Cy Young, but he's not going to get it, let's give him the Rookie of the Year. That's what I worry about when it comes to Jackson Merrill.
Yeah, for sure. I'm fully expecting to be disappointed. So,
meanwhile, Mike Schilt was named a finalist for the National League Manager of the Year Award. His competition.
Hi, this is Mike Schilt.
Hey,
is Carlos Mendoza of the Mets, who orchestrated obviously a great turnaround after a horrible start and got the Mets to the playoffs. And again, it's just a regular season award, so none of the playoff, part of it matters. And Milwaukee's Pat Murphy, who I believe is the slight favorite here among the three.
Why is that? I see a lot of that as well.
I would assume the same arguments for Schilt would apply to Pat Murphy. Exceeded expectations. I don't know what their payroll.
Well, see, if it's payroll, you got to take Mendoza out of it. Because they were through the roof. I mean, and I realize a lot of it was paying guys that didn't play for you anymore, guys that were hurt. I understand that. But your payroll
he
is
met
still
expectations,
$350 right? million dollars or something absolutely insane. When it comes down to Schulte and when it comes down to Pat Murphy, look, the NL Central is not as good a division as the NL West. It's just not. The Cardinals had a really bad year, barely finished above 500. The Cubs had a really bad year, scratched and clawed to get four games over 500. The Reds are terrible. The Pirates are terrible. So you come down to the NL West where you have the Dodgers who won the World Series. You have the Padres finishing second. And again, you're talking a probably 12 or 13 game expectations exceeded. You know what I'm saying? As far as Mike Schilt and the San Diego Padres goes, you know, Preller got robbed for executive of the year. I fully expect Schulte to get robbed by Pat Murphy.
Yeah, I mean, the 93 wins, which both teams won, I would say is much more difficult to do in the NL West. But at the same time, the Brewers did win their division. The Padres did not. That'll probably be held somewhat against Mike Schilt. I guess my biggest concern, though, is that I thought A.J. Preller was an overwhelming favorite, and they gave the award to the Brewer. In this case, I think it's fairly even. So what does that tell you who they're going to give the award to?
Yeah,
I guess it's probably going to go to the Brewer again. Now, that was different. That wasn't the baseball writers who choose the executive of the year. Those are the teams.
And I wonder too, how much you take into account, and maybe, no, not maybe. We are obviously biased because we covered every pitch of the 2023 season. Does the common baseball writer, Ben, know what an absolute S show that Mike Schilt inherited? Does that have anything to do with it? Does the fact that he came in to a culture that was really crumbling, I mean, and finger pointing and blame and this, that, and the other, and then led them to 93 wins in the regular season in a really tough division, shouldn't that matter as well?
I mean, Pat Murphy simply, he was already there.
Correct.
Just took the ball and ran with what Craig Counsell had already done. Whereas Mike Schilt actually had to, I mean, nothing against Pat Murphy, but he had to put in more work, I would say, in changing things with the Padres than Pat Murphy likely did.
Also, who's the best player on the Brewers? Did they trade him away? At the beginning of the season? I mean,
they lost Corbin Burns, so, you know, that was a big loss as a pitcher.
But I mean, Juan Soto is you get rid of Juan Soto and you win more games with the guys that you get back. I don't know, man. I think Schulte's as deserving, if not more, than Pat Murphy, certainly. But I do have that sense that Murphy will get it.
And
kind of a sexy pick for everyone.
And again, by the way, winning manager of the year doesn't mean anything, really. I mean, you know, Skip Schumacher won it a year ago.
Hey, out of a job today.
Yeah.
Did you hear that, Skip? It doesn't really mean anything.
Sorry, Skip.
What Ben is saying.
It means you had a really good season.
You can roll out of bed and win a manager. Any moron.
It doesn't
can
mean
win
that
one.
You are guaranteed to have a good season the next year.
Still like Skip Schumacher very much, just for the record. Let's get that out there.
Need a contestant for Take on Woods, and we've got a Las Vegas trip to give away again. Started just last week, so if you want to try to be one of our first qualifiers, call in now to Take on Woods in our musical trivia challenge, 833-288-0973. Call now, 833-288-0973. We'll play here in just a minute or so. I have the other nominees as well for Cy Young and MVP. No big surprises in the National League. Shohei Ohtani is up against Francisco Lindor and Ketel Marte. Ohtani's going to win that, I think, fairly easily. In the American League, Aaron Judge and Juan Soto are up against Bobby Witt Jr. Sometimes you say when teammates are both up for the award, they split the vote and it goes to the other guy. I don't think that'll be the case here. I think Aaron Judge is still going to get the majority of the Yankee vote and will end up winning the MVP award in the American League. We will find out for certain next week. On Monday, they will announce the Rookie of the Year awards. All these are on MLB Network, I believe at 3 o'clock our time, 3 to 4 o'clock they do the show. Tuesday is the Manager of the Year. Wednesday is the Cy Young Awards. And Thursday are the MVP awards next week. And there is a comeback player of the year, but it's not the same as the baseball writers. That gets announced, I think, later this week, perhaps. And I don't think there are finalists that are named. I would imagine Jurickson Profar is one of the guys who is up for that award. Chris Sale is probably up for that award as well. But I'm not sure exactly how they determine that one.
Okay. We ready?
Yeah, we got some callers calling in right now. Let's get to it. It is time for Take on Woods.
It's time for Take on Woods.
Take on Woods.
All right, let's see. Let's go, Tim. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, Tim. You are a contestant today for Take on Woods. It is brought to you by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. It only takes 15 minutes. You don't have to get out of your car. For directions and discounts, go to SoCalOilChange.com. That's SoCalOilChange.com. My board here says you're calling from Camp Pendleton. Is that true?
I'm driving to San Diego, but yes.
Okay. I mean, can you answer our question earlier? What's the hardest and easiest branch of the military to be in?
The Marine Corps.
That's what I thought. See, that was my answer earlier as well. All right, if you can beat or tie Woods here, Tim, you will qualify for our grand prize drawing of a getaway to the Westgate Las Vegas, two tickets to Soul of Motown, and a $150 food and beverage credit. Westgate has a brand new premier rooms, part of a $70 million room renovation, home of legendary Vegas fun, and the Soul of Motown, a high-energy concert-style musical tribute celebrating Motown legends. Must-see show. Get your tickets at Westgate Resorts. All right, here are your categories, Tim. We've got Locking Down the Save, five song titles beginning with the word save. Get Into the Rhythm, five song titles and artist including the word rhythm. And Who Has It Better Than Us, those are five song titles that include the word better. So Locking Down the Save, Get Into the Rhythm, or Who Has It Better Than Us. Tim, what would you like to play?
I'm not going to song titles. Better, I guess.
Better. Who has it better than us? All right, so we have five song titles. All include the word better. Hey, do your best. You never know how this is going to work out. You'll have 60 seconds for the five questions. If you don't know, once they pass, we'll come back to it. First question's the two-second song. It includes the word better. Paulie's going to play some music. You need to give me the title and the artist for that one. Tim, I know you sound lacking confidence, but I think you've got this in you. Come on, let's go. Let's do this. You ready?
Let's do it.
All right, 60 seconds on the clock. Category, Who Has It Better Than Us? Tim, your time begins when Paul plays the music. Good luck. Let's take on Woods.
Watching the clock, it's 4 o'clock. It's got to stop.
Yeah, we're going to have to pass
on. All right, he doesn't know that one. Carly Simon recorded which 1977 hit as the theme for the James Bond movie, The Spy Who Loved Me? Britt Howard Jones sings, and Do You Feel Scared? I Do, But I Won't Stop and Falter, in which 1985 New Wave hit?
Better than that.
Which song about loss and meeting someone new was a top five hit for Air Supply in 1982?
Better People.
I like your guesses. Fans of Ben and Wood should know which 2000 song by Queens of the Stone Age is our Wednesday show open music.
Oh, man.
All right, go back to our two-second song, Paulie.
Watching the clock, it's 4.
All right, Tim.
Thanks for playing.
Hey, I appreciate your moxie for calling in, but obviously this wasn't the game for you. Hey, we don't make it easy, that's for sure. So anyway, I can be pretty sure that that's not going to work. Let's bring Woods back in. I'll just save the answers for afterwards. Everybody playing along? All right, Woods, let's give you your shot here. Same category. 60 seconds back on the clock. Your time begins when Paul plays the music. Good luck. Let's take on Tim.
Watching the clock.
Oh, it's Better Man by Pearl Jam.
It is. Carly Simon recorded which 1977 hit as the theme to the James Bond movie, The Spy Who Loved Me?
Octopussy.
Incorrect. Britt, that's a totally different movie.
Oh.
Britt Howard Jones sings, and Do You Feel Scared? I Do, But I Won't Stop and Falter, in which 1985 New Wave hit?
I'll come back to it.
Which song about loss and meeting someone new was a top five hit for Air Supply in 1982?
I'm All Out of Love.
Incorrect. Fans of Ben and Wood should know which 2000 song by Queens of the Stone Age is our Wednesday show open music.
Better Living Through Chemistry.
Correct. Let's go back to Britt Howard Jones sings, and Do You Feel Scared? I Do, But I Won't Stop and Falter, in which 1985 New Wave hit.
What is the name of it? I need the category. It's not helping.
You got Better Man and Better Living Through Chemistry. Does that help you?
Better taint. I have no idea.
Things can only get better. Nobody does it better, and even the nights are better. But
even the nights.
Unfortunately for Tim, he didn't get any right, ooh, so you Timmy, did win sorry. Today. 2-0 in our category.
I hate a zero.
Who has it better than us? Yeah, Tim knew he was in over his head right away, but he had the moxie to call in. He's also a Marine, says the Marines are the toughest branch.
See, I thank you, Tim. I knew that. I knew that. That's why I gave you that. I gave you that credit this
Why
morning.
Would Octopussy be the theme to The Spy Who Loved Me?
I don't know.
It doesn't make any sense at all. Makes no sense at all, Woods. Your James Bond movie knowledge is just kind of, well, I mean. That,
was there a song called Octopussy?
No, I don't think
Octopussy.
So.
Octopussy. There should be.
Not sure what the theme song to that movie was.
But. Where does Octopussy rank on the Mount Rushmore of Bond James movies? Bond movies?
It's not a bad one.
It's number one for name, period. This doesn't get any better than that.
Has Adam wrecked his car yet? That's the other question I have.
I would like Ben to come up with the theme song. See if ChatGPT will write us up a theme song for the movie Octopussy. I'll do that right now on the break, actually.
Sounds good. We also have Don't Do This when we come back. You've got some audio for us?
Yes, we do have some audio.
The theme song is called All Time High by Rita Coolidge.
Oh.
Not one of the all-time great James Bond theme songs, obviously.
Right. Right, right. Yeah, we've got some audio, hot mic audio. It's never, never good.
All right, we'll get to that coming up next with Ben Woods after traffic here on 97.3 The Fan.
Don't do this.
It's time for Don't Do This.
What were you thinking?
Three stories from the world of sports that make us all shake our heads.
Why?
How many times do I have to tell you?
I'm sorry, I fudged up, guys.
You idiot. You moron.
You dumbass.
The apple sometimes does far fall from the tree.
Don't do this.
Do not tweet that.
With Ben and Woods.
I like a Nickelback song or two.
On 97.3 The Fan.
All right, don't do this. Couple of stories that make you shake your head. We had no shortage. No shortage of candidates over the weekend. I mean, the DDTs that hit the cutting room floor today. I mean, we had a college basketball team that had to turn their plane around due to force play on a flight.
I've got that in the Rondo report. The audio from the control tower.
You do? Okay. Oh, yeah. There's the Utah AD getting on and whining about officials and
got fined $40,000. Seems to hate the Big 12. Come back to the Pac-12. They'd love to have you,
bro. We have so we can get to some of this stuff.
Florida's
today.
Basketball coach who appears to be a giant creeper.
Correct.
But he's still coaching. I don't get that at all.
I don't either.
But let's get started with the actual DDT stories here.
Well, this one was jarring. And speaking of creepers, Tampa Bay Rays shortstop Wander Franco was arrested again. Yesterday in San Juan de la Maguana, 116 miles west of Santo Domingo in the DR, after what police sources said was an altercation in the parking lot of an apartment complex in which guns were drawn. Some of the men in the altercation were carrying firearms, did not specify which ones. Police sources confirmed that Franco and an unnamed woman were being held for questioning following the incident. So trouble is continuing to find Wander Franco wherever he goes. And, you know, at that point, you have to wonder, is trouble finding you or are you finding trouble, Wander? He is, as you know, on indefinite administrative leave from Major League Baseball. He's got a trial in the DR on December 12th. His case involves charges of sexual abuse, sexual exploitation against a minor, and human trafficking, which could result in sentences up to 20 years, Ben.
It would be, I think, at this point, an incredible surprise if we ever saw Wander Franco in baseball again.
Pretty much done.
We can probably retire him at this point from DDT. He's not even a figure in sports anymore because I don't think he's coming back. I don't think he's going to get the opportunity to come back.
It's just wasted talent, man. One of the bright young stars of baseball, and look at him now. It's not going well for Wander Franco.
Paul, you've got some audio for us on DDT.
Yeah, hot mics will get you.
Oh, they'll get you.
So this happened on Friday, I believe. John Wertheim is a sports broadcaster, journalist, etc., and he is a correspondent on the Tennis Channel. And he was being brought in on their studio show. He was doing it via Zoom or somehow remotely from his office. And so you got the desk and you've got the two hosts and they're coming back like from a commercial break or going to a commercial break. I'm not sure. Either way, in the background on the screen, you can see John Wertheim and he's getting ready to do his segments, and he's kind of doing the he's like looking at himself in his camera and just making sure he looks good.
Yeah.
And he had some disparaging comments about Barbora can't say her last name, I'm so sorry.
Krejcikova. I think it's something like that.
She was the Wimbledon women's champion, and well, here's what he said.
What do you think I am? Barbora Krejcikova. Look at the forehead when Krejcikova and Jung take the court. Eight head.
We're live. He had a hot mic, and he was looking at his forehead and making rude comments about her forehead. And he has been suspended from the Tennis Network indefinitely. And yeah. Hot mics will get you, and I guess rightly so. Like you deserve everything you get. You can't do that.
Look at that. Look at my. It's like us coming back from break. I mean, look at my forehead. Look at my forehead. Look at Ben's forehead. Eight head.
Didn't we have giant discussion about your armpits on the last show?
We did, but that was.
You're allowed to have a discussion about your own armpits. Uh-huh. You just can't talk about anyone else's armpits.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Especially on a hot mic. I don't know why we would be talking about someone else's armpits, but you certainly spent a lot of time talking about your own.
Uh-huh.
How are they, by the way? Any improvement over the weekend?
No.
Same.
Still on fire. Yeah. Haven't really done any.
None of these 700 deodorant suggestions you got.
I got to get through the ones I got to get through the deodorant I have. I can't throw it away. I can't. I just haven't yet.
Mister, the guy who accuses me of being a penny pincher.
It's not even that. It's laziness.
Really, you're not letting me just switch out your deodorant until it's gone.
Can I be honest? I honestly have not had time to wade through the 176
$4 stick of deodorant. You need to.
It's funny
you need
that
to
you
use
think,
the last drop of that before you're going to switch to something that's not causing your underarms to burn.
It's funny that you think that these deodorants that people are recommending are $4. Some of the ones are like $24.99, and I'm like, do I want to make that jump? Do I want to make that jump yet? Maybe, but I still have to go in and do the trim. Underneath. I haven't done that yet. I'm panicked about that. I kind of don't want to see. You know, it's kind of like there's you see something on the ground and a blanket is covering it. Do you really want to pick that up and see what's under there? No, that's kind of where I'm at right now. So I'll get to it this week.
Finally, a little doo-doo this.
DD mega doo-doo.
We've been following the story in this segment for some reason of the passing of Kirk Herbstreit's dog, Ben.
Yes, we have.
I have. So I'll give you the good update.
It's been your favorite story.
This weekend in Baton Rouge, another college game day, and Kirk Herbstreit brought one of his new puppies with him to college game day. Apparently, Ben has been quickly replaced in the Herbstreit household. I apparently already had some puppies before his tragic dog to cancer, Ben, and the outpouring of support and love from all of college football. Even Raising Cane's took out a billboard to honor Ben. For all of his happiness that he brought to Kirk in the world of college football. But now there's a new puppy. Don't know if he's going to be making the rounds every week with Kirk Herbstreit like Ben did, but
Peter,
sounds
he
like
looks
people,
just like
Yeah, just
Ben.
Like a little tiny Ben.
Peter is the new dog.
Peter.
And so I saw College Game Day the other day, and they had this dog roaming around, and I thought to myself, not a lot of mourning time there for the first one. Quickly replaced. Is that the move if you lose your pet, you know, the pet that you love so much that did all the traveling with you? You're like, I can't not have a dog here. So he gets a new dog. He didn't get a new dog. He already had
it. I think he's already had some new dogs.
So Ben's been traveling the world and riding on PJs and everything. And now the other guys are like, cool, our time? Thanks, Kirk.
Peter's excited, gets to show up now to the big events.
Yeah, yeah. He was sitting on his ass at home watching Dad on TV.
What do we think about naming dogs people names versus, you know, like...
I think it's great.
Bruiser, or you can just, like, name him...
Mike. Like, Mike the dog.
How come no one names their dog Mike. I didn't think anyone named their dog Peter or Ben, though. Well, Ben is... a dog name, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also a name of a rat.
That's true.
In a Michael Jackson song.
Ben. The two of Peter's us. Peter's a little, that's an unusual one.
Yeah.
And I've never heard of a dog named Mike.
No, I haven't either. Our beloved Hillary.
Steve.
Hillary from 91X. She has a dog named Dave, and it just lays me out. I think it's like.
I think it's hilarious.
I think it's every like. It I think she named him like David Lee Roth, and he goes by Dave.
Dave.
And it's just it's the greatest.
I will say, I'll give it a don't do this as well on that same story. Making that man on Saturday morning, he had to like narrate this produced feature on Ben, and he's just weeping through it. And the lead in to it, I was watching College Game Day. They're like, all right, Kirk, tell us about this next feature. And he's just like, he can't get the words out. He's still extremely in the grieving process. And they're just like, come on, Kirk, talk, speak. Come on, let's get it out. And he's just like, I'm sorry.
Oh my God.
And it's just, I'm like, guys, move on.
Yeah.
The man has been through it this week.
He's clearly moved on as well since he had another dog there with him that very next day.
I love the dog names in our chat here.
Joel.
Norman. Joel.
That's good. My friend John had a dog named Bill, which was great. Bill the dog was amazing. All right, we got a jam. We got an interview.
All right, yeah, we got J.J. Cooper from Baseball America will join us to talk about Roki Sasaki's posting and what it could mean for the Padres and the rest of the league. That is coming up next on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. I think Woods is worried we're setting ourselves up for disappointment. So he's actually taking the tack that just assume the Dodgers are getting Roki Sasaki and be pleasantly surprised if he goes to the Padres or anywhere else.
When in doubt, yep.
What is really going to be happening over the next couple of months? We got a special guest joining us right now. He's the editor-in-chief for BaseballAmerica.com. Been covering Roki Sasaki, knows more than most about the Japanese pitcher who is going to be posted. J.J. Cooper joining us here on 97.3 The Fan. J.J., good morning. Thanks for your time today.
Hi, good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well, man. I need you to make us feel just even a little bit better. You see all the tweets coming out over the weekend, and they're actually handicapping it now, JJ. I don't know if you've seen, but like John Heyman, Bob Nightingale saying, oh, no, it's about 85% done to the Dodgers. Padres have about a 10% shot, and the field has about a 5% shot. Now, we've heard this before. We've seen it play out with Shohei, and Yamamoto is obviously a different story, but, you know, how legit is 10% to the San Diego Padres, in your opinion?
I would say that in my reporting, the Dodgers and the Padres are the two teams that come up as like, here's the case for why he's going to end up there.
Yeah.
Right? Like, cause this is unique. I mean, this is a weird situation because on the one side, this is a player that all 30 teams should be trying to acquire.
Yeah.
Right? Because when Shohei Ohtani hits free agency, let's just be honest about it. There are 20 teams, like the Kansas City Royals, the Minnesota Twins, the Cincinnati Reds, the Miami Marlins, all those teams, they're not part of the discussion,
right?
They're not going to devote $40 million of payroll to one player, even if it's deferred. But this case, we're talking about a player who's going to be coming over for fractions of what he's worth, right? We're talking about one of the best young pitchers in the world, and to acquire him is going to cost somewhere between $2 and $8 million in a signing bonus and major league minimum, basically, for the next 2 years.
Wow.
So everyone should want that. Now, he has a choice, though. He gets to choose where he wants to go, and that's why the Dodgers, who obviously are the preeminent team in baseball right now, the World Series champs, and a team that has done very well with, you know, has multiple Japanese stars already, but then the Padres have Roki Sasaki's best friend in baseball in the major leagues in Yu Darvish. So both of these teams have kind of like a logic to them, although, again, this is a player that all 30 teams should be trying to acquire.
JJ, I've heard some of the arguments. I don't know which ones I believe, though. Why? Why is Roki Sasaki coming over now when if he waited 2 years, he could get a Yamamoto-like payday, his team could reap the benefits of that as well? Why is he feeling so urgently the need to come over to Major League Baseball this time around?
So, again, this is all a little bit, this is my, you know, reporting, talking to people, but it's all secondhand and thirdhand. Maruki Suzuki has not, you know, laid out to me his thought process, so let me be clear here. But from what I understand, Roki Suzuki always has wanted to come to the majors. He almost went that route straight out of high school. And, you know, although, again, it is rumored and all, but it's talked about that it's very likely that one of the ways that Chibolete was able to sign him was a promise that they would help him get to the U.S. more quickly than the normal path. We saw this with Shohei Ohtani. Now, there is a little difference. Shohei Ohtani came over roughly the same age, but when Shohei Ohtani came over, you could kind of make the argument that while he was foregoing millions of dollars, although he's, I don't think that Shohei Ohtani is going to, you know, go broke anytime soon. It's worked out quite well for him. But he had accomplished almost everything he could accomplish in Japan. He had won a Japan series. He had become a star slugger and a star pitcher, right? He'd already done all that. In Suzuki's case, he is coming over, and you kind of have to say that it's never fully come together. He's had moments of dominance. He had the best two back-to-back games, I think, that anyone in baseball history has ever pitched. He threw a perfect game, and he followed it in his next start by throwing 8 innings of a perfect game before they pulled him because he'd thrown a complete game, perfect game in his previous start as a 20-year-old. So, I mean, that's remarkable, but he's yet to have that season where he put the team on his back as their ace, and he's coming over to the U.S. having not done that yet. But he has always wanted to come to the U.S., it seems like. It's kind of been kind of the story of his plan all along.
Talking to J.J. Cooper here from Baseball America on Ben and Woods. And, J.J., I can remember vividly, we didn't know a lot about Shohei Ohtani when he first got here. And you would read these stories. Oh, man, he is just a baseball rat. And when he's not playing baseball, he's thinking about baseball. He is really quiet, likes to go play video games, sleeps 15 hours a day, and is just consumed by baseball. What do we know, if anything, about the personality of Roki Suzuki? Because, we talked about it earlier in our program today. You know, look, if you're a guy like Roki Suzuki that's never had to put a team or hasn't been able to put a team on his back yet because of some injuries, in my mind, like, the Padres are a pretty good fit. You come in, you could be an ace right away. You go to the Dodgers, you might get lost in the shuffle a little bit. He's probably their three or their four on day one. But what do we know about his makeup, his personality, if anything?
He's already endured a lot. And when he was a 9-year-old, there was earthquake that basically he lost his father and his grandparents, right? So he kind of went through a lot at a very young age. And, you know, this is all kind of secondhand, but, like, it was something where he, you know, so he had to grow up very quickly. And then there does seem to be the subtext of, the way I've had him described to me is, you are talking about a guy who, at his best, has an exceptional fastball and exceptional splitter. I'm talking as good as anybody. Now, what we haven't seen yet is where it all clicks, and he's got control, too. Like, you kind of look at it and say, why hasn't – he's been incredible at his best, but you kind of ask, why hasn't he had that season already where you say, oh – he's just the best pitcher in Japan. And there's been, you know, injuries. There's been kind of, it does seem like in some ways almost a, like, it does seem like it would not surprise me if everything clicked in the U.S., in the major leagues, in a way it hasn't yet. I mean, he is still very young. We are talking about a pitcher who's basically Paul Skene's age, right?
Yeah.
And so he's had 4 years pitching in the MPB, but he's – if Paul Skene's had had a good year this year, but not an incredible year in the majors, we wouldn't be saying, what's wrong with Paul Skene's? Why hasn't it all clicked yet?
Right.
Right?
Right.
So, if this is a pitcher whose the future is very bright, and it's really more ahead of him than behind, is the way I would put it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
If you told me, and go back to, like, for whatever team lands him, this is the safest, quote, gamble you'll ever face.
Yep.
Because the analogy I will also use on this isn't, again, they're different pitchers, but, like, if you said that Spencer Strider or Garrett Crochet was available on the free agent market for a few million dollars and they were going to sign a minor league contract so you would have team control for 6 years and they're going to be major league minimum for the next several years, 30 out of 30 teams would be like, where do I sign up for this? Yep. Well, Spencer Strider's had two Tommy John surgeries already, right? So there's some durability risk there with Spencer Strider, but at his best, he's a Cy Young caliber pitcher. Roki Sasaki has yet to have the season where he throws 180 innings. He yet to have the season where he throws 150 innings. But it's not really a risk when you're talking about that he's going to sign a deal that, you know, the team that signs him, the other player they would be giving that to is a 16-year-old, 17-year-old, you know, Latin American prospect who it might all come together or who might never make it out of, you know, Class A. So this is kind of like the safest, quote, bet that anyone could take because this we've also seen the track record. We saw not just Yoshinobu Yamamoto last year, but look at Shota Ibunaga. Look at what we've seen from, you know, a number, Kodai Senga a couple of years ago coming over to the Mets. The track record of Japanese starting pitchers coming over is pretty good.
JJ, how you mentioned, you know, what the money could go to, and that is guys like Ethan Salas and Leo Dallas DeVries, who the Padres have spent on the last couple of years. This would come out of that international bonus. Mm-hmm. I understand that most of those teams have probably already planned their spending for 2025. AJ's been scouting in, you know, Latin America for years to get ready to sign these players. Will they likely have to abandon that class if they end up signing Roki Sasaki? And will that cause problems for a team that changes their plan, you know, at the last second to give that money to Sasaki?
So this is where this does get tricky, right? So one of the things we're going to have to look for is when does he get posted? Okay, because if he gets posted before December 2nd, so this is where this gets really interesting. We are currently in the 2024 international signing period, okay, which makes sense. We're in 2024. That period ends December 15th. From December 15th, no one can sign. After December 15th, no international amateurs and no international non-foreign pros, because he's obviously not an amateur, but he doesn't meet foreign pro standards for this. You can't sign between December 16th and January 14th. January 15th, the 2025 signing period begins. Well, but there's also a 45-day window once a player is posted from Japan. So if he's posted on December 1st, November 25th, whatever, then you're talking about this year's signing period, and then you are talking about if that happens, I would say it's even more likely that the Dodgers sign him. The Dodgers have set some money aside. They still have they have the most money available in the 2024 remaining in their 2024 budget. If he doesn't post till December, which by the way, if you're Kiba Lote, you get 20%. You get 20% of whatever he signs for as your posting fee. So it would be, to be honest, it would be negligent on Kiba Lote's part to post him before December 2nd. It makes no sense.
Yeah.
Because if you click it over to the 2025 signing period, instead of him signing for $2.5-3 million at most, you're talking about him signing a deal that's probably going to be more in the $5-8 million range. And then again, I mean, it's a fraction of what he's worth if he came over the free agent, but you'd be talking about Jerkie Belote instead of getting $200,000, $400,000, you'd be getting $1 million, $1.5 million, $2 million. But at that point, then everyone, it becomes really challenging because do you blow up your international class to try to sign Sasaki, which means having those really difficult decisions where you say, hey, I know we promised you this, but we didn't know that Roki Sasaki was going to be available. Mm-hmm. We still may want to sign you if we don't get Sasaki, but if we can, we have to go back on our deal because it's not an official deal yet. That's going to be a tough call for all these teams to make.
JJ, really appreciate it. Good insight, and we'll obviously be following this closely over the next couple of months. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
And by the way, there is one caveat on that bonus pool, and we can talk about that after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. So obviously money is not the biggest factor with Roki Sasaki, or he wouldn't be coming over right now. We can say that with a great degree of certainty. But if he does want to maximize his earnings, they're going to wait, as JJ said, until after December 2nd so he can take advantage of the new bonus pool. And I did read that teams can trade for up to 60% more of their bonus pool. AJ did it last year.
Yeah.
Sent a prospect somewhere, you know, pick up another, you know, 600,000, million, whatever in your bonus pool to increase it. So if it is money is the issue, there's ways around that.
To get money.
To get money.
Yeah.
And they will do that if they have to land Roki Sasaki. But we will see how this plays out. Really interesting story. All right, we'll come back. Two more hours of Ben and Woods still to come. Don't go away. San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan.